Hi, I'm Zach.
Hi, I'm Madeline.
And this is the Evolution of a Snake, Episode 2. Okay, so welcome back, everyone. We don't know how you responded because the first episode still is not really out.
I had no idea how long it took to get a podcast like approved.
Girl, me
it,
either.
It makes me wonder if there are like people that like sit there and like listen to your podcast to make sure that it's like kosher or whatever.
I feel so sorry for whoever had to sit there and listen to us scream about Taylor Swift.
For all we know, they're fucking Taylor stan, so they were like, I love it, girl.
That's true. Maybe they're taking a really long time because they are looking up everything we're talking about.
Yes, exactly. Wow. They're like, oh shit, did that happen?
The heart tattoo? That wasn't real.
There was a heart tattoo at one time?
You know, TBH, that's quite a niche thing to know. Even I had to look that up.
It's pretty niche. It really is.
And it's not talked about.
That was my whole life. Back in the day, like when I was a Taylor Swift fan, like in the early days, it's like I didn't have anything the fuck else going on, so it's like all I ever fucking did was sit around and know useless information, like she draws a heart on her foot.
Well, not much has changed.
No,
our
really,
lives have
really
not really progressed that far.
Nope, they really haven't.
But anyway, this is our second episode, 2008, which was a year.
I when I sat there and I thought about like what we're doing 2008 next, I was like, how? It was just a whirlwind.
It was a whirlwind. And I would say this was a really important year for Taylor becoming the pop superstar that she is now.
Oh yeah, this was definitely like this is like the year. I mean, people always talk about like Red or even Speak Now, and they're like, oh, pop country crossover, blah, blah. I'm like, it started with Fearless. That was the first time.
I mean, you're really gonna
tell me You Belong With Me isn't just a pop song. My ass.
I love Story. Like, yeah, there might be a fiddle on there, but girl, that's a pop song too.
That's a pop song.
Also, this podcast is sponsored by Emily Poe, who Taylor fired.
Oh, yes, of course. Yep. At least her money is going somewhere good, a.k.a. this podcast, because the money she made off of Taylor, yep, it's dirty money.
Wait, so we're going to get into that drama when it comes around to Fearless and we talk about the song Breathe, because that's about Emily Poe. Also, some would say, I've read some articles that would argue that that was the beginning of her, quote, lesbianism. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we're gonna say that, it definitely started with Emily Poe.
Conspiracies are believed to be true.
Yeah. So many things just ran through my head when you said that. I was like, like more flashbacks.
Okay, so we start out the year in January with Taylor's first Ellen appearance ever.
When you sent me the doc that had that on there, I was just like, that happened? Do I remember that? And I meant to like look it up, but I just kept reading, so I completely forgot about it. I don't remember that performance.
I also now, we're such bad podcasters, I am struggling to remember it as well, but I think it was just, she sang our song and she had the sparkly guitar. So it was a standard issue, that era performance.
Yeah, not much to report on that. But there was no interview?
There was no interview. She might have come over and done that, like, oh, the CD Taylor Swift is out now, but there was no, like, interview.
Back when nobody cared what she had to say.
Yeah, Taylor was not that girl at this time.
No, she was the musical performance, and that's it.
Yeah, that was all. And she was lucky to be there. She probably sung them out on the credits. So Taylor's still going hard promoting the debut. And in February, we get Picture to Burn as a single.
Oh, that video makes me so happy.
Really?
It really does. Yeah, okay, listen, it might just be because of the nostalgia aspect, but you have to admit, parts of it go hard.
That's true. Parts of it go off.
I mean, her look, her hair, when she has her hair up and that like ridiculous updo, she snapped. The looks were served. Do I think that the video could have survived without the introduction of her and Abigail trying to act?
Swift.
Yes. I do think that
I think it would have been fine. Yeah.
She
had one friend and she really wanted to just put that one friend on display. So she invited Abigail to do this dialogue in case any of you haven't heard it. And it's the beginning of her acting career, I guess. she just says some lines and it happened.
Well, you know what's funny is that by comparison, Taylor looked like such a much better actress than her, just by comparison, because Abigail really was bad.
She didn't serve. That wasn't a serve for
Abigail. No. And I think it's funny that she like straightened her hair for this whole thing. Like she really got ready to be in the Taylor Swift music video.
And I think that Abigail learned probably from this experience to kind of stay behind the scenes in future times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the next time we see her ass is in the 15 music video, and she doesn't have any fucking line.
They both know that Abigail shouldn't speak.
Well, it's like they gave her a friend in the White Horse video. It wasn't Abigail, so that says enough on its own.
Yeah, it really does. Abigail was not invited back. She was eliminated.
Yeah.
But also, this video is funny because it's where the agency is established. What do we think about the agency?
It's so hard for me to like even talk about it because like her having like a band at this point feels like such a foreign concept to me. Like it was a completely different universe when she had like a fucking band.
And she rode hard for them too. She really was obsessed with her band.
She fucking promoted them. She's like, this is Taylor Swift. Here's my fucking band. Name by name. I had like live performances from her where it was just like, oh, we're gonna play our song, and there's like fiddles and like all the stuff, like an intro, like, hey guys, this is Paul and this is Caitlin Evanson, a beautiful, and it's like 5 minutes of her just talking about her band
and no one cares.
I really listen, even in my days of being like number one up her ass stan, I have nothing else going on in my life except for Taylor Swift, I did not pretend to fucking suck anybody else's dick aside from Taylor's. But there are people out there who to this day discuss what's her fucking name, the Liz, the dark haired girl.
Her flop music career is still mentioned.
Flop music career, it still comes on my TL. Taylor has never
mentioned. She very, very mercilessly fired Caitlin and Grant after the Red Tour. So why should I have to care about all of these people that Taylor herself doesn't care about?
Right? I don't care. I don't care about Liz and her fucking singles.
I really don't care. But you want to hear something funny? During the Red Tour, I heard that there was a flight carrying something to do with Taylor Swift's tour in coming into the airport when I happened to be off school. And I was like, okay, let me just go. Like, it's going to be Taylor. My dumbass thinking that Taylor's going to be flying commercially at this point. This is like right before 1989. The bitch is not on an AirAsia jet with all of her crew. But I thought that maybe she'd make an appearance. But instead, what I got was the agency. And they all were very happy. They were all very happy to see a fan. I think it had been a while for them because Taylor had pretty much started to ignore them at this stage. Grant was very nice. He had his long, horrible hair. Caitlin was very nice. And you know who was rude as fuck?
Was it Liz?
Paul Sidoti. He was an asshole.
I was the last person I would expect to be a little bitch.
And he was one of the surviving members. So it was shocking to me that he was so up his own ass. Like, everybody stopped for a selfie and he was like, I'm sorry, I don't have time, I'm on a schedule. And then I proceeded to watch him like go and sit in a bus. So it was that happened to me. Off-topic story.
Oh my fucking god. Oh,
yeah, so the agency are established and they're all featured very prominently in this video. They all get their own moments.
Yeah. What I remember most is fucking Grant, I think. No, not Grant. What was that guy's fucking name?
Amos?
Amos, yes, yes. When he did the, it was like, I almost said whipped cream. It's shaving cream, like on the whip, on the fucking.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Caitlin does the mouthwash, and the next time they're all in a video is the "We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together" video, which was a fucking mess. But we'll get to that.
Yes.
And this single, upon release, was praised by critics who supported its feminist message.
Are you being serious? Is that sarcastic?
Yeah, no,
or not?
I'm serious. I'm serious.
Oh my god! Okay.
Sarcastic at all?
All right. People okay. Really let's said do this. It. Okay. It's feminist message. Okay. All right. I mean,
feminist anthems. I have to say
it has its points. It has its points.
It has its points, but are those feminist points? I'm just
no. Not. I don't really know if being like 17 and being mad at your ex boyfriend is inherently a feminist act in and of itself. But you know, all right, go off.
I suppose. And Picture yes. peaks at number 28 on the general charts, which is not bad for a third
really
single.
Not bad, no, not
at
all.
Number 3 on the country charts.
Good, good job.
So well done, Picture to Burn.
Congratulations, Picture to Burn.
We're so
you
sorry that
bitch.
Taylor has murdered you.
Yeah. R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Never to be heard from
burn.
Again.
Yep. He literally will never hear from her again.
No.
But this is early 2008 is also a big award show time for her. So I'll just run through the awards that she wins because the appearances themselves are not that interesting. The early awards that Taylor Swift wins in 2008, she gets Best New Female Vocalist at the ACM Awards, Slay. She gets Slay. Favorite Country Female Artist at the AMAs, Slay. They love her.
They
she
really
gets
do.
Two awards at the CMT Awards, and we get yes. a performance, which we'll come to later.
Okay.
She is nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys, and she loses to Amy Winehouse, which is fair.
That's totally 100% fair.
At that time,
yes.
they were two girls on two different levels.
They really were. I mean, Amy, let's not even get into it, but yeah. everybody knows that was
yeah.
deserved. So.
We all know that Taylor didn't deserve Best New Artist at that time. So... before the Grammys, which is where she meets Joe Jonas for the first time, we'll discuss later, she does Picture to Burn at the CMT Awards, which is a fucking serve.
That remains in my memory as being the fucking serve of that fucking era. People were like, she can't fucking sing. And she said,
oh, really?
Oh, can't I, bitch? Can't I?
And she couldn't really, but she tried.
The fact that she's wearing a fedora, it like takes it down like maybe a half decibel, mm-hmm, but it yeah. comes off.
It comes off. She rips it off and she flips her hair, and it just Billy Ray Cyrus introduces her.
I remember that.
It just is a serve. Like it's so good. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's Fetus Taylor, Vindictive Taylor T, lots of hair flipping. It's vocals, very good.
It's vocals, it's lip gloss. I mean, what more do you need?
Nothing. From this period of time, my standards are low.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That surpasses them. so then in May, we get Should Have Said No at the ACM Awards, which is another mm-hmm. amazing performance.
It really, it speaks to a generation of fucking women and just feminism and fucking this is that personally for me, if you were like, okay, why do you think I was just about to say something so fucking crazy, why do you think Hillary Clinton ran for president in the year 2018? I was gonna
because
say because Taylor Swift performed Should Have Said No at the fucking ACM Awards in 2008.
That's
10 years earlier. Yes, 10 years earlier. But the relevancy carried over.
I was going to say that
why.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg was out of a job when this happened. She didn't know what to do with herself. She got fired. She wasn't able to make a living from this anymore after Taylor performed this.
Yes. RBG out of work.
RBG out of here. So we also, this is a performance that is important because it begins the trend of a few things that we come to know and love from Taylor. So the first, quick change.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we know that Taylor loves a quick change. She loves a quick change. And we also get some rain.
Yes, rain is synonymous with dramatic Taylor Swift performances from this moment on.
And serving. Just lots of serving.
And serving. Also, do you remember the controversy about when she got her mics switched out?
Yes, I was just about to say that. So Taylor has never been a lip syncer. It is not her thing. She usually sings live, even if it's bad. But this point in time, there was a small part at the end of the song where she switches her mic out and then she gets rained on. And the vocals sound pre-recorded.
And I mean, it's not even just that they sound pre-recorded. They sound so much fucking better. Like, if I'm like being that bitch right now, it just, the second that mic gets changed out, her vocal performance goes up like 10 points. Easy.
It
10
goes
points.
From karaoke singer to recording artist real quick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's like, obviously there was a reason for that, but it's interesting to me that, you know, the next time she performed that song live, yes, on her own tour, true, she, with the rain and everything, she somehow manages to find a waterproof mic. It's like, what, you couldn't get a waterproof mic for the ACMs? You had to switch it out?
They definitely didn't have the budget. They didn't have money, for sure. And award shows, I think, have different rules, and they're, like, really annoying. So I'd say just for the, like, the convenience of it all, they were like, just lip sync this last part. And Taylor was like, I'm not famous, so... Yes, I'll do whatever I want.
I'm not famous, so yes, I will.
But I would say that is the first and last time we have a televised performance of her not singing.
Yes, I agree. I can't think of a single other instance where somebody said she was lip syncing. Maybe people said it, but they weren't right.
And she also, Taylor sings to track a lot, which is not the same as lip syncing.
Yes. Yes. Even on tour, like even at the Reputation tour, the track is in the background and you can kind of tell, but then she sings over it, which I don't really get that, but what do I know about performing?
I would rather have some supported chorus vocals than Taylor sounding bad and breathless. I would rather have a fuller sound, you know?
Yeah.
Miss Taylor vocals have never been her strongest suit. Never.
Yeah. I mean, it's no secret. She's no, like, fucking Beyonce or Christina Aguilera. She just isn't. Which is, like, that's not even, like, the thing that she's, like, sold herself on. So, to me, it doesn't really matter. It kind of annoys me when people, like, try to use that to drag her. It's like, well, I mean, at least 15 people didn't have to write her own fucking songs for her. So, yeah. I mean, whatever.
And she's not out here saying, listen to my ballad.
Yeah, exactly. These are my amazing, incredible vocals and my piano-based ballad.
She's literally like, I'm here to shake it the fuck off. So
yeah, that's it.
If you want to, do it with me. If you don't, get out of here. Go see Mariah. Watch her stand there and snort cocaine and scream.
Yes, if that's what you want, go get it.
But yeah, so that is the final single from the debut, and the music video, unfortunately, is not a music video. It's just the video of the performance. But the performance was so good that we can't excuse it.
Yeah.
So then back to the Grammys, we get her first Grammy look.
It's so bad.
It's awful.
There's no way to sugarcoat it, and it's so bad that I even knew that it was bad the first time I saw it when I was fucking, what was I, 14 maybe? When I was 14, just a dumbass. I looked at that dress and I said, oh my God, that's fucking terrible. And the worst part about it was, like, it wasn't just the dress. She paired it with this, like, off red berry lipstick. She looked like a goddamn
eyeshadow. It was so bad.
She looked like a goddamn idiot.
It looks like a reworked version of what she wore in the R Song music video. Like, she loved a corseted dress at the time, but the color is very similar as well.
And had, like, those weird, like, feathers on the skirt.
Oh,
like,
my God.
They're just, like, sticking out. Like,
it completely covers her feet. She doesn't have feet in these pictures. Was she wearing shoes? We won't know.
Well, I have no idea. If you were like, oh, what shoes was she wearing at the fucking 2008 Grammys? I'd be like,
no idea.
I don't think she, for all I know, she wasn't wearing any shoes.
Exactly.
For all I fucking know.
The bitch wasn't wearing shoes.
Yep.
But this is where she is seated next to Joe Jonas.
Ah, yes.
And it's hard to state how profoundly this would impact her entire career, but it did. He was just a dumbass boy. Like that.
It wasn't even worth it. No. The amount of drama that I personally lived through, not to mention what the rest of everybody else went through, not to even begin with what Taylor went through.
I know,
for
Taylor
a Jonas
herself.
Brother.
It's just, it's crazy. They're flops. They're all flops. Every single one of them is a flop. And I guess at the time they weren't flops. Like they were, Taylor was a flop.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big name. So the fact that like she was dating her, I mean, just to give everybody context, I was at a Madison Square Garden Jonas Brothers concert because my best friend at the time was really big into the Jonas Brothers. And so I like agreed to go with her, even though it wasn't really my thing. I was like, whatever, she's my friend, I'll go. So I go, I show up. Taylor Swift was a special surprise guest. And I, at the time, had no fucking idea because I wasn't in the online fandom quite yet for her. Fearless
hadn't
even come out.
So it was a surprise, genuinely.
Yeah, it was it genuinely shook me to my fucking core. And when she was introduced and she came out, the reaction to her was so fucking lukewarm.
Really?
Not that anybody disliked her. People didn't know her that
well. They didn't
care. Especially not, like, maybe if she had done, like, Our Song. I don't really understand why she did Should Have Said No. I guess just because that was the single at the time. But it's like, Should Have Said No was never, like, a number one pop radio hit. Not even top 10.
No.
So it's like, most people didn't know it. And, like, they were like, oh, this is Taylor Swift. I recognize that name. I know of her. But this random song she's singing. I mean, just to give context, like, Jonas Brothers were fucking huge. She was only just beginning to become even
anything.
Somewhat of a household name. You know what I mean? So just contextually, that was the relationship.
The performance itself is kind of a serve. And there's a HQ version of it because it was on the DVD. So that's good to have.
Yeah.
Was that the show that did she come out more than once, or was it just the one time?
No. So there were a couple of shows that she came out to. I know that they're not the same show because at my show at Madison Square Garden, she was wearing the glittery blue dress, and the one on the DVD, she's wearing
A
gold one. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I'm pretty sure what's embarrassing about this scenario for Taylor is that I'm pretty sure that most people were more excited about Demi Lovato coming out than they were about Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah. When they said they had a special guest, I thought it was going to be Miley Cyrus, which would have been like so much more of a bigger deal for other people.
And how the turns table.
Yeah, oh, how the turns table. Can you imagine if there was like, oh, this is, I don't know, 5 Seconds of Summer, and they have fucking Taylor Swift there, and it's like, and then they're like, oh, we also have Demi Lovato.
Everyone would be like, cricket. Yay. Okay. All right. Go off, I guess. Sorry, not sorry. So this is a pivotal point in the Taylor Swift personal life timeline because she falls really, really hard for a dumb ass boy. Like, there is no other way to describe how dumb he was because I just don't think he cared, and she really cared a lot. I think that really
Yeah. I mean, what has he ever said about her? I don't know.
Other than that song that he did.
Yeah, other than that one song that he did. He has never made any mention of, like...
He's scared, probably.
But it's like, to me, it's like, oh, I don't want to stir the pot. But at the same time, I'm going to release this bullshit-ass song. And then also, I'm going to have a love bug. Wait, was that... No, wasn't the love bug video the reason that he met Camila?
Yes. He meets
whatever
Camila. Okay. We'll get into
he
that later
meets
in the year,
her on
yes.
Love Bug. Okay, yes, okay.
So right now she's happy. She's happy. She's having the time of her life. And the Beautiful Eyes EP comes out. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this because it was pointless and dumb.
I know. I was looking at
wasn't it a Walmart exclusive?
Yeah. It was a Walmart exclusive. It came with like a really cute little poster, which I still have.
That's cute.
It has a little flowers and stuff. I was like, oh, that's cute. And then the only good thing that ever came out of that was I Heart question mark.
Oh,
even then, it's like, it's
so
a
good
banger, but it's like embarrassing almost to listen to it. But you're like,
stage,
I'm ashamed, but it slaps.
I Heart question mark is the song that was heard around the world.
It was the shot heard around the world. It was what started the revolution.
Taylor's biggest single to date sold 18 million copies. If I had my way, it would be. Okay.
I know.
It slaps. It goes so hard. We have talked about this before, but we did the iHeart question mark on our hands.
Yeah, we sure did. I was representing. It was always so embarrassing when someone would be like, what does that mean?
And you'd be like, I myself don't know. I'm just doing it because Taylor Swift said to.
I'm representing the queen right now, which I don't know. You don't know who she is yet, but one day you will.
One day you will.
Question mark, my friend.
That song will be forever ingrained in your brain and as a strong part of the fabric of pop culture.
Yes.
Beyonce heard it and she was like, wow, I need to get a hit. I need a hit.
The fact of the matter is, I heard question mark is what gave us Lemonade. People just don't realize that.
No one gets it, really. Anyway, we're going to get completely roasted for saying that. But the only other original song, as if all the other ones are fake. The only other new song that we get on this is Beautiful Eyes, which snooze.
Oh my God.
I just skip every time.
It's honestly to me on the same par as Why Would You Want to Break a Perfectly Good Heart?
So dumb. And I think that it's like, to me, it's like a spiritual cousin of Superstar. Like Superstar's very young, stupid cousin. They have similar vibes and concepts.
That's very interesting, actually, that you say that. I've never thought about that before, but as I'm sitting here thinking about it, I'm like, you're right. Very similar. It's like the same subject matter in a lot of ways, but like Superstar is so much better.
Oh,
executed.
So much better. Beautiful Eyes sucks compared to Superstar.
Yeah, Beautiful Eyes, I mean, it's like a joke comparatively.
So we also get on this, just so everyone knows not to buy it because it's a waste of money. We get Should Have Said No, the alternate version, Teardrops on My Guitar, the acoustic version, which I don't understand.
I like it. It goes off.
It's basically already an acoustic version, the regular
version. No, but it's better because it's just the guitar.
Okay, I'll give you that one. That one you can have.
Okay, thank you.
Picture to Burn, the radio edit, a.k.a. We Decided Not to Be Homophobic. Here you go.
Yeah. Here we go. Thank you.
Then you get I'm Only Me When I'm With You, which we don't care about that much. And then I Heart Question Mark. So that's Beautiful Eyes.
Yep, that's her.
And she does no promo for this. There is no
promo. No. She has the Beautiful Eyes music video, which was just like her 18th birthday party. It's literally it's just a Beautiful Eyes music video. And it's like the setting up for her 18th birthday party and like her getting her makeup done, and her fucking makeup in this video is like goddamn serve. Like there's actually a picture of me from when I was around this time, and I have the attempt to do her makeup look from this fucking video, because it's just like this pink purple glitter eye, it's a serve. And it's not really that interesting. It's just like, oh, this is my birthday party. Here's me crying at a slideshow my mom made for me.
Of course.
While Beautiful Eyes plays in the background.
Yeah. Just something we didn't need, but I guess we're grateful to have.
Yeah, yep. Especially the eye makeup.
So she takes a small break from promo after this and kind of lays low for the first time in her life to finish Fearless. And she continues to date Joe Jonas. So on August 8th, I didn't realize this until I was looking up the receipts, but Change was the first release from Fearless.
Oh, yeah. No, it was for the Olympics.
Yeah. It was the Olympic anthem, which is so weird.
It was the Olympic fucking anthem. There was like an Olympians like album that came out, and Change was on it. And it had other such hits that I couldn't even begin to name off the top of my head. But yeah, Change was on it. And it was very patriotic video.
Very intentionally vague in its subject matter. It's just kind of like a flop browsing anthem.
There's something like weirdly religious about the video, though, if you watch it. She's like in that white dress and she's like lifting her hands up, and there's like this like white light coming in from behind her.
It's just weird. It's a weird song. It's not bad. I don't think it's bad at all. I just think that
it's not one of her
weirder subject matters because it's unclear. She's usually very specific with what she writes about.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, it's like Long Live, but like Long Live Junior.
Yes.
Because Change, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Who told you that you were going to fail? I want to know.
Your dad put $100,000 into your career. Like,
right?
Who's standing behind you with a gun. Like, you're not going to make it. So it's also her first ever top 10 hit on the Hot 100. Isn't that crazy?
Change?
It peaks at number 10.
What the fuck?
I know.
I thought it was a complete flop.
No.
It did well. Oh, shit.
It did better than Teardrops on My Guitar, which is baffling to me.
And if you ask people, like, oh, do you know the song Teardrops on My Guitar by Taylor Swift? They'll say yes. If you say, do you know the song Change by Taylor Swift?
Be like,
answer's no.
Yeah.
There's no.
They don't know it. But I think I would say maybe her profile was on the rise and a new release just kind of got momentum behind it.
Yeah. I definitely remember listening to it a handful of times when it first came out, being like, yeah, this slaps.
It gets mixed reviews from critics who also don't like the message, as in the lack of a message that there is, which makes sense to me, to be honest.
It's fair. It's totally fair.
So we're gearing up for Fearless now. We're getting ready to release this iconic world-changing album.
Yes.
So a little bit of background. Taylor kept so many songs from writing during her development with Sony. We know, sis. We know.
Believe me, girl. I know.
We know them. Literally, we know them.
Yeah.
So she thought that her second album would just be filled with cast-offs from that. But then as she was touring, she kept writing. Thank God it wasn't an album of cast-offs from that. Really.
Can you imagine if we had an album that was like Sweet Tea and God Graces, Never Mind, What Do You Say,
please,
Diary
no,
of Me, Diary of Me.
That song. Oh, that song. It plays in my nightmares. That is a bad song. That one really doesn't slap. What's the opposite of slapping?
It's like tapping or snapping.
And it sucks. So she decides not to do an album full of those songs, thank God. But because she was on the road and poor, she didn't have access to a lot of co-writers. So she ended up writing half of the album by herself because she's a fucking legend.
Yep. Legends only from this point on.
And this continues a trend of writing by herself that I wish she would bring back. But anyway, so back in May of this year, to gauge responses of the new stuff, she performs 4 songs in Vegas that she was considering to put on Fearless. So I'm sure you know that one of them is the single that never was, that she continuously pushed, Permanent Marker.
Can you imagine if Permanent Marker was on Fearless? Can single. You imagine?
She really tried to make it happen and it never got off the ground, literally. Then we have Missing You.
I don't think that I am aware of that. I don't think I've ever heard that title before.
Me either, but it's listed multiple places and we're pretty tuned into the rares. So
I've never heard that. Was that on DBT?
I have no idea. Maybe, but it's down now, so we don't know. We'll never know.
Oh, but he made a new page.
He did?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, we can't get into this now. We should do a whole episode on rares and DBT and Steve. Like, that needs its own episode.
Yeah, I made a fucking 30-minute video about it, and I didn't even scratch the surface, so I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about.
Then we get Sparks Fly, the original version, Wig.
Wig. Like, literally, it
really
wig.
Slaps. The original version.
Really does. Really even slaps. That. And also, just so everybody is clear, the original shitty live recording was recorded, incidentally, by Steve from DBT.com. That is his fucking recording.
Wow. Steve is way deeper into it than I ever thought he was.
No idea.
Why was this 30-year-old married man so obsessed with a young female artist?
I asked myself that question back then. And even now, as an adult, I'm like, why? He was married. He had a kid. He had a kid.
That's really weird. Thank you, Steve, I guess.
Yeah, that's the one thing he ever did for us.
You say my name, baby, and I fall in love in an empty bar. Taylor, what were you doing in a bar at age 17, Miss Virgin Mary?
Miss Virgin Mary. That's why they had to change the lyrics. That's the entire reason why. Because I prefer that lyric to the one that actually wound up on Speak Now. Because I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's the first one I fucking heard. I don't know.
Frankly, yeah, I would feel like I prefer the original version. Also,
it goes off. Like has a better flow.
It's more country. She's more fiddle on it. You know,
she's more yeehaw.
So then she also plays Fearless, which is the only one of those songs that actually made it to the album on September 12, 2008. The world is changed because Love Story is released as the official lead single from Fearless.
I cannot tell you how many hundreds of times I listened to that song on repeat. It was like something about it. Like that was the song that came out and it was like, I knew, like I had already seen her at the Jonas Brothers concert. This was like a month after the fact. I was like, I know this is I stand. I didn't even know the terminology at that point, but I was like, this is my fucking ride or die. Something about that song. That song just
elevated everything for me. Right. I remember hearing it and exactly the same, being like, wow, I can get behind this girl. This is some good shit right here.
Yeah. It's an incredible song. I don't really give a shit what anybody has to say about it.
It did so much for country in terms of making country like giving it a younger demographic, giving it pop crossover appeal. She paved the way for all the blonde country girls that are trying to do it right now.
She really did. I mean, this love story in and of itself is the epitome of what all these girls are trying to do. They can't, by the way.
They cannot. No, they really don't know how. They can't even do Teardrops on My Guitar, so there's no way they can do
there's no way they can do a love story.
They're struggling to do, like, a Sweet Tea and God's Graces moment.
Oh, my God.
They could never. They can only dream.
Never.
So yeah, Love Story comes out. We cannot stress how important this was to her legacy. Everybody and their fucking mother knows this song. If you say Taylor Swift, they always say the Romeo and Juliet song. Like everybody knows this fucking banger. Obviously, Shake It Off, I would say, is her most widely known song of late. But I would say that Love Story is something that everyone who knows who Taylor Swift is knows this song.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's critically praised, obviously, because it's amazing. It is one of the best-selling singles of all time, like just of all time. And it debuts at number 16 and peaks at number 4, which was surprising to me because You Belong With Me outpeaked Love Story, which just isn't right in my books.
No, that's – I don't – I mean, I guess it like makes sense if I think about it, only because it just had like more like Love Story should have been a bigger single than You Belong With Me. But people are simple.
People are simple. You Belong With Me resonates more. The girls don't always, and by the girls, I mean the public, the girls don't always get a concept, you know, a metaphor doesn't always land.
It doesn't.
And this one landed. We just think it should have, you know, crashed into the ground.
Yep, crashed.
Obviously, it tops the country charts, clearly, for weeks and weeks. It's inescapable. So Taylor's riding high on her, you know, success from Love Story. And in October, Joe breaks up with Taylor for Camille Bell. And he ignites a fire that he did not know was going to be this severe.
When he struck that fucking match, he didn't realize he was throwing it into the gasoline. He really did not.
This gives me chills to think about because this poor stupid boy really just had no concept of what he had done.
Not even close.
And poor Camille Bell, too. Like, she was never going to have a career after this. If Taylor had anything to say, and she did have things to say, there was going to be no opportunity for her.
Yeah, it's so funny to me that it was her. It was Camille Bell. because who is she? Who was she then? Who was she even 2 years after the fact? Who is she now?
We know her just because of this. Like, this is the reason why we even speak her name. Joe idiotically breaks up with Taylor for this random person who he meets filming a music video. And Fearless is almost done at this stage, so it's going into album production. And Taylor loses her mind and goes into the studio and records Forever and Always and is like, this has to go on the album. Thank God she did that. Thank you.
It was a fucking serve and a half.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Scott Bruschetta, for not ruining things by saying no. So she finishes Forever and Always, and it goes onto the album. And there are four promotional singles in the lead up to Fearless. So it's Love Story, Fearless comes out, You're Not Sorry, which is a weird pick for a promotional single, and then You Belong With Me. Mm-hmm. So those are the four songs plus Change that we get before the album comes out. And then we have one of the weirdest things that has ever happened to Taylor Swift that I continue to not understand and wonder what the purpose of was. The CMT crossroads with Taylor Swift and Def Leppard.
I did not know
what
you were going to say.
That?
I was sitting there and I was like, what the fuck is he going to say? I was not expecting you to say that. I didn't even remember that was a thing that happened. I have it on DVD. I have the whole fucking thing.
And do you remember how fucking weird it was?
Yes. What I remember most of all is that Def Leppard was way too old to be like
singing
doing
Pour
this
Some
anymore.
Sugar on Me with Taylor Swift.
They sang, and but that's not even the weirdest part. The weirdest part was the Love Story duet.
Oh, that was so weird. Oh, God. And they all sing Teardrops. Like, what is that? Who are
it
these
was
people?
So weird.
It's
I don't
just like
think
I've a power Taylor with an artist. Def Leppard is the first one that comes to your mind.
Well, it's and then I remember in the special they're always talking about like Andrea Swift was such a big Def Leppard fan. It's like, okay.
Do we
so
believe
that?
Means,
do I think that she listened to Pour Some Sugar on Me in 1983? Maybe.
This was,
do I think
can't
she was a
state.
Super fan?
This really was such a weird moment. Like, I don't get it. It was, Taylor was really into it. She really loved it.
Oh my God, she was fucking on cloud nine.
She was.
Just
she was
from
so
watching
excited.
It.
This was like the early incarnation of her bringing guests out, I guess.
Just like, cannot take the image of them duetting Love Story and like looking into each other's eyes.
Well, this man is
she
like 45 years old 19. And Taylor's like, yeah, 18, 19. It was weird. It was really weird. And I mean, Taylor loved it. So I guess, I mean,
yeah,
and
I'm
think
happy
to the
for her.
To the newsstands, this might not come across as like such a strange pairing because now Taylor has like crossed paths with basically everyone and has done some form of collaboration with a bunch of different artists. But at this time, when we had the virgin Taylor Swift, who was singing about God and going to church, maybe, and saying yeehaw and wearing cowboy boots with the Virgin Mary on them, it was weird that she did this collaboration to such an extreme, like an hour-long special, right before her album came out. Like, what?
Well, you gotta get promo. You just gotta do it.
You gotta get promo, but I don't think that any of the Def Leppard fans were rushing out to buy Fearless. I can say that. All right, so Madeline, your final thoughts on the Def Leppard x Taylor Swift collab? Unnecessary?
Yeah, I feel like I've said it all.
There's not much else to say. Go watch it on YouTube. It is something else. That's what I have to say.
Oh, yeah.
Then I believe we get the CMA performance of Love Story, which is amazing.
Is it? Describe it to me. Remind me which one that is.
This is the one where she has the faux balcony set up and she's wearing a purple ball gown. And
yep, okay.
In. She walks down. There's a quick change. She's wearing the white wedding dress underneath.
Yes.
It's a serve.
I don't really remember. Yeah, it's a serve. It's a
and
fucking serve.
That was the first performance of Taylor's that I ever saw on TV. And I remember seeing the quick change and being like, holy shit. This is art.
See, this girl is on another fucking level.
She knows what she's doing. She really did. And again, as we always say, when Taylor performs her lead singles for the first time on TV, the vocals, they just aren't good. You can look up this performance. The performance is a serve, but the vocals are not super strong. Yeah. But yeah, we know not to expect that from her on a first performance.
I never have high hopes for like hearing a song live for the first time from her, because I'm like,
she needs time with it. She needs to sit with it, get confident, get comfortable, do her runs, yeah, her ad libs. She needs to learn it. She was always, I think she was nervous too. This is always the case. But it was a good performance. We liked it. Legend. We stand.
Legend. We stand.
So then November 11th, 2008. It's the day. It was the night things changed.
Genuinely, it was the night that things changed. Nothing was the same. Pop music nothing, wasn't the same.
Never.
And neither was country. Neither was country music. That's, I mean, we changed two genres in one day. That's what she did.
That's what she did. She did that to us, for us, about us, about Joe Jonas.
To us, for us, about, to Joe Jonas as well, to Camilla Bell.
Fearless is released, and we get an iconic series of pictures of her buying it in Walmart.
Yes, yes. That was that the last time that she's done a Walmart run?
Yes, Target obviously said, here's more money, and she said, goodbye, Walmart.
Goodbye.
Adios.
I have this memory of her just, you know, being all casual, like, here's me in my jeggings and, like, my sweater and my updo, like,
with
it's
my pearl earrings.
Yeah.
My album came out. Oh my God. Who knew? She goes and buys, like, literally, there's pictures of her with like 5 or 6 copies of it.
Well, you know, you do what you got to do.
You got to get those sales. She does it. She does it. I would say, wait, I don't think she did it again after Fearless until Reputation. Did she actually go and physically buy the album?
Yes. She went and she bought Speak Now.
She did 1989 too, but it was low key. She didn't meet fans. She went though.
No. Yeah, she went.
So just a little bit of background about the album before we get into our thoughts on all the songs. So the day Fearless comes out, she has her first iconic interview with Ellen, and she performs Love Story, and interestingly should have said no, which was definitely a pointed choice.
An incredibly pointed choice. I mean, there's
this whole appearance was like, fuck you, Joe Jonas.
Also, I am about to dominate your ears for the next 10 fucking years.
She
goodbye.
Knew. You could see it in her
she
eyes.
She did know. She knew.
She was doing something. And I would say this is when she realizes that she can market her personal experiences to drive album sales and give herself more publicity. I would say she becomes aware of the fact that she can do this after this appearance on Ellen.
Yes, I think that at the start when she was saying all this stuff about Joe, like in the video log and on Ellen itself, I don't think she realized like what she was doing. I think she was just fucking mad and
was young really mad.
Stupid. And then like all this stuff happened and she was like, oh shit, I can use boys to sell albums.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
And I think that also it's really interesting to see Taylor talk so candidly about a specific person by name. Like she says, he broke up with me in a 28-second phone call. That's essentially what she says. And she like roasts him severely. But it's interesting to see her being so candid and angry. Like this is really just how she feels. It's not spun in any particular way. It's not like really trying to sell a particular song. She really is just doing that eye for an eye thing. Like she really is out there trying to roast Joe Jonas because he did something bad to her and she wants people to know that. But current Taylor would never do anything like that ever again.
Oh no. Can you
never
imagine?
She's learned. She learned her lesson the hard way and she would never do this.
Imagine if she ever said a single fucking word about Calvin Harris. I still haven't heard anything.
Nope. She has never directly said anything, but he has said a lot.
Oh, he's gone off. He's... I cannot wait to talk about that shit.
No.
Because that was...
2015 is going to be like 2 episodes. Like, that really...
Yeah. It's got to be.
But so this is the beginning of the salacious details of Taylor Swift's personal life, where she becomes Vindictive Taylor. I think it's so funny that she performed Shoulda Said No, because that was not on the album. She did not need to promote that song.
No, she
did that for a reason.
I also remember that there was like a performance of, I want to say it was White Horse, that she did, and like Joe was in the audience. And everyone was like, she was looking directly at him the entire time. And the camera never fucking pans to the audience. So I don't know that. But it was.
It would make sense.
Yes, it would make a lot of sense.
So this is where Taylor's beautiful relationship with Ellen begins. I think Ellen has a lot to answer for in terms of creating the misogynistic press representation of Taylor with all the boyfriends and stuff. But we'll get to that. But she has fun. I think Taylor really enjoys this. She's a great interviewee. She interviews really well. She's so smart. Yeah. She really can turn it on for the cameras. And this is the first glimpse that we get of really good promo Taylor. We get this quote too. When I find real love, I won't remember the guy who broke up with me on a 28-second phone call.
Oh my God.
It's just pure savagery.
She served us so much to eat.
Like, we ate so well that day.
We really did.
This was such a huge moment. It really was. It was so big. It was prolific. It was long spanning. People still reference.
Like, I can remember what she was fucking wearing. It doesn't even matter, but I can remember it because it was so iconic. That's when I knew the album.
Good times, man. I miss when Taylor was this confrontational about stuff. She just learned the hard way not to do that. But
I know.
We had it. We did have it at one time.
Yep.
So Fearless is a huge commercial success. 500,000 copies in the first week, debuts at number one. It holds 11 non-consecutive weeks at number one, and it is the longest reign on the Billboard 200 of the 2010s.
Really? I didn't know that.
So this album was really, I think it might be her most commercially successful album other than 1989.
Actually, I think that I would have to agree with that. Just looking at like Speak Now, Speak Now was not a flop, but it did not. It had the same single performance as like, oh my God, I think it debut. Even did kind of. I think it honestly, it did Speak Now did better than 1989 on,
really?
In some respects. The singles.
The singles did not do well on Speak Now.
No, they really didn't. They underperformed. But I mean,
we love Speak Now. Speak Now is one of her best albums, but commercially it was not on the level that her other albums have been. Like, it sold really well, but the singles just didn't land.
And then there was Red, which was like
a serve.
I don't know. It was a serve. I don't know what I'm trying to say. As compared to Fearless, I'm not sure.
Fearless was bop after bop with almost every single landing with the public.
Yes, that's very true. Fearless, I would say that there's almost no, aside from maybe The Best Day for me, is there's no like low point on the album where you're like, oh, this is, I'm gonna skip this song, or maybe even a couple of songs. It has like such playability.
It's back to back bops.
It's back to back bops. It's back to back to back bops.
Okay, so let's get into the album, because this is what the girls are here for.
Yep,
that's what they want to hear. So the album is a critical success, obviously. Everybody loves it. The critics think it's amazing. She gets the comment always that it's great for someone that young, which continues to piss me off. And her country artistry is questioned again, as in people are already starting to pick up, like, this is more pop than it is country. But who cares?
That's the thing that I never really got about that whole thing. It's like, dude, who really gives a shit? Like, I mean, if there's a banjo in it, it can be played on country radio. Because there's
that's it.
I mean, have you listened to country radio lately?
It's not complicated. Like, it's really not complicated.
Yeah, it's really not.
The album cover is a fucking serve.
I think I honestly to this day believe that that is the best album cover.
It is. That picture has been used to death, but I will look at it every time. Every time I see it, I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for serving us, Queen.
Thank you, Taylor. Yes. We eat so well because of you.
Yes.
So the Fearless track list, we'll get into the Platinum Edition in 2009. So we're just going to do the regular standard edition.
Okay.
So should we do the messages as we go through the songs or do them after we do all the songs?
We can do them as we do each song.
Okay, so we have up first, Fearless. The writers are Swift, Liz Rose,
yeah,
our
of
fucking
Thank
queen.
You. Thank you, queen. Thank you, queen.
And Hillary Lindsay, who I can't say I've heard of before.
That is the only song that I think that she's ever written on. Well, if there's another one, it's
job.
On Fearless. Yeah, but it's like, who is she?
And the message for Fearless is, I loved you before I met you, which doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
And I just
about.
Say, I think most Ooh. Of this album is not about Joe Jonas. I think Forever and Always is the only song that's about him.
Yes, 100% agree with that.
Because this album was written mostly either as she was just starting to date Joe or towards the middle of it. I don't know. I guess because she had to rush to get Forever and Always in, right?
Yes, she had to rush to get it in. So I almost think that most of it was written before they were even really that serious.
Yes,
I think they might have been starting to like record and like certain songs and stuff like that, but I think it was mostly the songs were already picked.
Fearless, what are our thoughts on the title track?
It's so hard for me, like when I've listened to the song so many times, like, yeah, I really love the song. I think it has probably some of the best like one-liners, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like just lines that you can just like
head
out.
First, Fearless, in yes. a storm, in my best dress, really good. Speak Now, it gets a really amazing ukulele version that I think makes the song like on another level of goodness.
Oh yeah, it just makes it so much happier.
It's such a cute song. It's a very sweet song. It's a good album opener. We love the concept.
No, we love the concept.
And this is Taylor's like first time building an album around a concept, which she has done every album since.
I mean, I guess she couldn't have like built. I guess she couldn't have had a concept for like
for the debut. I'm 16.
The concept is Taylor Swift.
But yeah, so we like the Fearless concept. The song is good. It's fun. It was a single, a later on single in the time of Fearless. It got a tour video, which I'm not super happy about because I think that this is a like cinematic song.
Yeah, every day that makes me angry. If I think about that for too long, I get so fucking mad.
There's
like, you could have done anything, you fucking scum.
Like, you scum.
Yeah.
13 management, fuck you.
Yeah.
You guys suck. Taylor Nation, eat my ass.
Yeah.
Liz Rose, again, serves us goods. Next song is 15.
I do love this song.
I love it. It speaks to you at a time in your life, I feel. So when you're actually 15, this song really says things to you that you need to hear.
It fucking resonates. It really does. I mean, I used to cry when I was 15 listening to it, and then I cried when I was 18, and now I cry still when I'm 25. It makes me cry because it's like, even though I'm not 15 anymore, I remember when I was, and it was hard. Like it sucked. So
I think also like a lot of the times teenage girls' lives get trivialized in the media and stuff, and they're like, their struggles or their hardships are really made fun of and not taken seriously. And what Taylor manages to do is like take those experiences and say that they're important and serious and they have lasting impacts on your life.
Yeah.
And I think that was such a skill that this song.
That was sort of to me like what Fearless entirely was about in a lot of ways was, you know, you're young and your emotions are crazy, but even though it feels like nobody cares or is listening to you, like Taylor understands, and like she's gonna write about it and she's gonna make you feel like you're not alone. And that was kind of like why that album was so important and still is to so many people. So yeah, I mean, 15 is sort of this really important moment on that album. That's why it's like the second track. I mean, it's totally not a track two. if you think about it. It's definitely
not
a
track two. It's
but
not.
It, it, she was like, this is track two, bitches.
She was like, here, enjoy. So 15 was good. The video, we'll talk about that next year. But the video, I just, it exists. It's a green screen. It's definitely a green screen.
Abigail's there.
Abigail's in it. Yeah. Also, there was some drama about the lyric, Abigail gave everything she had to a boy who changed his mind. That was a feminist critique of hers, is that it's insinuating that she gave her virginity, which is everything a girl has, which is like obviously wrong. But I don't think that was the intention behind the lyric at all.
No, I personally, I think that with their interpreting it to mean like, oh, Abigail had sex and that was everything she had, quote unquote. But I don't think that they're only talking about, or that Taylor's only talking about losing your virginity. I think she's talking about time, emotional energy, you know, emotions, period. And also
those things are valuable.
Sex, which is important. I mean, I don't really care what anybody, you know, what any feminist angle is. When you're 15, losing your virginity is a big fucking deal. It no is. Matter how many people say, well, it shouldn't be, well, it shouldn't be. It's like, well, it fucking is. So I don't know. Even now, as a grown-ass adult, not giving a shit about arguing with feminists about Taylor Swift anymore. Yeah, as one, as a feminist now, it's just like, girls think that it's important. So I, you know, it's not everything. You know what I mean? You get what I mean.
Okay. I get what you mean. Okay, thank you. But we agree that 15 is not a problematic song at all.
At all.
At all. Like, not even slightly. Yeah. But this was one of the earlier critiques of Taylor before she came out as a feminist.
Yes.
But to surmise, we don't care. Then we have Love Story. Great. Asserv. 15, also to note, she wrote by herself. Legend. Love Story, also written completely by herself, which shocks me because it's so radio friendly, you know, like it doesn't seem like there needed to be any editing on that song, which is
true.
Taylor wrote it all herself.
Totally true.
And when I was at her house in Nashville,
Don't
know if anybody knew that I was there, but I did. And Andrea showed us, I think, the spot where she wrote Love Story, or like, she was like, this is where Taylor grabbed her guitar and wrote Love Story. And it was like obviously a spiral staircase leading up to, I think, what was her bedroom, which was interesting to know.
Very interesting.
So then we have Hey Steven, also written completely by herself. I think this is a smart song. This is a really smart song.
Yes. I personally really like it. I think it's super fun and just like almost kind of like campy and just like, I don't know. It's just super cute. I really like the song.
Taylor's not taking herself too seriously on this one.
Not at all. And she like basically almost makes fun of herself, kind of.
She's not there yet.
Yeah, she's not there yet. But it's super, super cute.
Would they write a song for you? Wink, so cute.
I had that. That was what I wrote. What I wrote on my shirt at the Fearless Tour, excuse me, was would they make a t-shirt for you, which is what millions of other girls did. I know, which is such an original thought.
Oh, honestly, all the costumes we wore to Taylor Swift concerts over the years, they're questionable.
Embarrassed by some of them, honestly.
But yeah, anyway. Hey Steven is good, but I wouldn't say it was a Fearless highlight for me personally.
No, it's kind of mid-range. It's not bad, but it's not like my favorite. It's just like in the middle.
Then we have, with again, Liz Rose, our queen, White Horse. I'm gonna let you take the reins on this one. This is your song.
It is my song. I have a tattoo of some of the lyrics from this song. This song, I think probably one of the most important things to note about the song is how it juxtaposes alongside Love Story as being like, here's Love Story, and it's this great fairy tale, like, oh, Romeo and Juliet, prince and princesses, blah, blah, blah. And then White Horse is kind of this like, oh, guess what? It's not always going to be like that. Life is hard and relationships are hard. And
which is an important angle to have on this album.
It really is, because the album itself can seem so like, and has been misinterpreted by a lot of people as being this like idealistic fantasy land. Boys are great. Love's everything. Relationships are everything. I'm just waiting for my Prince Charming, blah, blah, blah.
Really, it's not like what White she's Horse, saying.
It's not even close. And White Horse is so just like encapsulates everything that, you know, she means is like, yeah, relationships are great and boys are fun, but you know what? Sometimes it fucking sucks and it's not a fairy tale.
And they're horrible.
So, there you go. Yeah, I fucking love the song personally.
Do you want to tell the story about your tattoo and John Mayer maybe seeing it?
So I work at a restaurant in a town that is, it's really close to a national park and is very low key. So a lot of celebrities, for whatever reason, like to come out here and like buy a house and be in this town or even in the general region. Like a couple other people do. Justin Timberlake, for example, lives out here.
Weirdo.
Sometimes for some part of the year. Katy Perry, back when she was with John Mayer, was also out and about. Kesha has been here too at my restaurant in specific. And so he came in and has come in several times. And I have spoken to him and looked into his face several times. And my tattoo is on my wrist. And I can't say for certain that he's ever looked at it and read it. But what's important to note is that John Mayer not only dated Taylor Swift, he performed White Horse with Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm. It's not like he doesn't know the song.
Oh, he knows the fucking song. If he ever took the time to like stop and read it, maybe he wouldn't instantly remember it because it's kind of a throwaway lyric from the song. It's not like
the lyric is "Try and Catch Me Now."
Yeah, it's "Try and Catch Me Now." So I don't know if he'd be like, "Oh, that instantly reminds me of White Horse." It should, the dumb bitch. But for all I know, it doesn't. But it's funny to me the way that it just like all comes full circle in that way. Just,
I'm
like
surprised
life.
You didn't say anything to him because I really have some things to say to John Mayer.
I don't. I guess. Most importantly, I don't want to get fired because I mean, they fucking love him. My, like, the owners and my managers, like, they have, like, this framed John Mayer thing up in the restaurant office. And also, sometimes he just takes stage on, like, the 4th of July weekend and starts performing and everybody loves it. So, I don't know.
Is he nice? Yeah.
He's not, like, oh my God, so friendly, so nice. But he's definitely not rude. He has never been rude to me. Or anybody in my general vicinity. He's just like normal. He says please. He says thank you. He tips well. So there you go.
Well, there you have it, ladies. The tea on John Mayer as a restaurant patron.
He is so average. So normal.
So then we move on to definitely an album highlight and a Taylor Swift career highlight. You Belong With Me. I just love this song. I'll never get over this song. It's so good. The clap clap, like everything about it is great.
The clap clap is definitely a highlight, a moment. And it's just like such a stupid thing. It's really just clapping our hands, but it goes off. Why does it go off so hard?
And the Swifties go off to it too at the concert. Liz Rose also wrote this with her. Cannot stress how much we love her.
Yeah. She really knows. And it's so weird because like the Liz Rose song to me is definitely not a song that's like this
You Belong With Me. Yeah.
No, this was so weird for her, but like it was so good at the same time.
This song is prolific. The video is amazing. We'll get into that next year also, but the song itself, we love. It's so catchy. I think the bridge is amazing.
Yes.
She's serving vocals in this song, I have to say. She is giving us some good vocals.
She really was, yeah. Especially, there are actually like quite a few really good live performances. One that comes out in specific that's bad of the song is when she had a cold. She had a cold and it was like in Australia. And she was like, hey, everybody, I'm really sick. And she tried to do
proceeds to butcher the song.
Yeah, oh my God, Taylor, she didn't have to do it that way, but she has had a lot of really good performances of this song, incidentally.
Yes, and she's become way more comfortable with it, because I think it was a little out of her range at first. Like, it's very high for her, so I think she's definitely become more comfortable with it as the years have gone on. Like, she really served on the Reputation Tour with this one.
Oh, really served. Oh, and the Red Tour version of it was it was so cute.
Oh, so cute. That's a really underrated performance.
Yeah, it really is.
Anyway, next we have one of my top three Taylor songs of all time, Breathe, featuring Colby Calais, also written by Colby Calais and Taylor Swift. And fun fact, Colby Calais got a Grammy for this because all the writers on an album for Album of the Year get a Grammy. So Colby Calais has a Grammy for Breathe.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you get a Grammy just because you wrote on an album.
They've changed the rules now, but back when Taylor won Album of the Year, that was the rule. So Colby Clay has two Grammys, one for that stupid song Lucky and one for the hit single Heard Around the World.
She won a fucking song for that bullshit song Lucky?
Yeah, she did.
Okay,
well, but anyway, back to breathe. One of my favorite, the emotion in this song just really speaks to me. And what I love about this song is that it's not about losing a romantic interest. It's about losing a friend, which I think is a heartbreak that doesn't get enough seriousness or weight attached to it.
You guys don't really ever talk about how hard it is to lose a friend. It's almost worse.
Yeah, it is worse. A friend breakup is really hard to deal with. And I think that when I was in middle school, this song was a lot easier for me to relate to than something like White Horse. I love White Horse, but Breathe spoke to me. I felt like I would sit in my room being like, I'm sorry. So this was a crying song for me. This is, everybody has their Taylor Swift songs that they cried to, and this is one of them for me.
Yep. Yeah.
And I thought it was dead. I thought Taylor completely forgot that she even wrote this, but she sang it on the Reputation tour.
She decided to snap.
And she was I remember someone asked her to sing it, and they were like, "You've never sung it live before." And she was like, "Have I not? I really think I have." Liar. It happened.
Dumb bitch.
I would probably know.
Think she's played if this was a movie too.
Oh, don't even get me started.
What I think of Breathe. Breathe, actually, incidentally, not when the song first came out, but in the space between Fearless and Speak Now, I lost my best friend. Not she was alive. When I say it that way, it sounds like she's dead. She was alive. We had a friend breakup. And it fucking was awful. And this was the only song, I think, that I knew then. And that I think, the only one that I think I still know, that's specifically about losing a friend. It hits you in a different way.
It does.
It really does.
And it ages well. The strings are so good in this song.
It's even the end. The I'm sorry.
That's really heartbreaking.
Shit.
The end really. Yeah. I don't understand why this is featuring Colby Calais, because as far as I know, she just does very light backup vocals on this. She doesn't sing lead at all in this song.
No, not even a bit. And that's really interesting to me that they sat there and they wrote this song together. But Colby was like, maybe because it really was just
so
Taylor's
personal
experience. And Colby
there's footage of them meeting and recording this for the first time. And then also, we should probably get into the drama around Breathe. This is allegedly about Emily Poe, who played the fiddle for Taylor and was abruptly fired. I think her and Caitlin both played at the same time in the band. And then Emily was fired for a reason that is still not known to us to this day. But we know that it ended badly.
I don't really know what it was. I've heard different versions of why. One of them is, of course,
the lesbian.
They were secretly in a lesbian relationship with one another. No corroboration on that. There's no proof. I think it's
we never will have any.
But it's just kind of okay. So maybe they were. I don't know. But it's weird to me that whenever two women have a really close relationship and then they're sad when the friendship ends for whatever reason. It's they must have been fucking. It's well, why can't two women just be really good friends? And there's nothing sexual about it.
Yeah. The Kaylorers are going to come for you over that one.
Well, I don't, this isn't about Kaylor though. This is about, that is a completely different thing because.
And they can come. They can come. I'm not going to say anything.
There's way more content for Taylor. You could make the argument, oh, maybe they were fucking. Maybe they were. Emily and Taylor, there's no content.
We don't know.
We have no content.
We don't know.
Other
there's
than
a few
Taylor
pictures.
Was sad.
Yeah, Taylor was sad about this. Oh, we forgot to go through the secret messages. Okay, 15, the message was, I cried while recording this. Not shocking. Love story, someday I'll find this. Okay. Hey, Steven, is love and theft. Interesting.
Oh, because that was the name of the band that the guy Steven was in.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Do you remember when, what band was it? It wasn't Love and Theft. It was Gloriana. They had a music video and Taylor.
Didn't they?
Taylor was in it and so is Steven at one point.
Whoa, I did not know that either.
Yeah, I think they arm wrestle or something.
Of course. What else would they do?
Yeah.
So White Horse, the secret message is, all I ever wanted was the truth. Queen of drama.
Queen of drama.
You belong with me. And that message is, love is blind, so you wouldn't see me. It's kind of sad.
It really is, yeah.
And then Breathe is, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Oh, that just hits hard.
It hits so close to the heart.
I don't want Taylor to hurt also. And that song is pain. That's like straight up pain in that song.
Yeah.
Okay, so next we have another banger. Writers, Taylor Swift, obviously, and Liz Rose, again, Tell Me Why.
I have no strong opinion about the song whatsoever.
Really? I think it goes all the way off.
I will admit that there have been times when Fearless was one of those albums where it's like, I can say, oh, this song was never really my favorite. There was definitely a time when I was listening to it on repeat and it fucking slapped. But as for like overall, I'm just like,
also, when you live with an album for a long time, I think we talked about this in the last podcast, but when you live with an album for a long time, your opinions and your favorites change a lot over the years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would say Tell Me Why is probably one of my favorites off of Fearless, just because I can scream to it. I can get angry. The Fearless tour performance of it was really good. Taylor was serving some stomps. She loved to stomp to this song.
She did.
Yeah. So I like this one. I don't think this is talked about enough, but personally. And the secret message is, guess I was fooled by your smile.
Queen of drama.
She really is. Okay. Next is written by Taylor alone. You're Not Sorry.
So for me, this was initially one of my favorite songs off the album. I thought it went all the way the fuck off. Just so dramatic.
So
piano,
dramatic.
Instrumentals, like bah, 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 bah. It was just like so fucking good. Upon further reflection, as I grew up, I was like, that song is way too dramatic, even for me.
Yeah.
And I'm really fucking dramatic.
That's my problem. My problem with this song is that it feels childish. And I don't think a lot of Taylor songs are childish, but this one just feels a little too melodramatic. Not to plug Lord there,
it's melodramatic. Way too much. And it's like, you know, that this was like a high school relationship. Like,
for
it must
real
have been.
That's the thing, like, with our most dramatic songs is that you know they're about something very small,
right? And then meanwhile, something that actually was really dramatic, like let's say Calvin Harris, not a peep, not a murmur.
Nope, nothing.
I don't get anything.
We get a side eye on Getaway Car, and that's it.
That's it.
The secret message is appropriately dramatic. She can have you. All right,
go there. Off queen. Yeah, off queen.
Let her take him. Another underrated song that was written by John Rich. I've never heard of him. With Taylor Swift, The Way I Loved You.
It's from Big and Rich, right?
Yeah.
Again, this wasn't a song that particularly stood out to me at the time, but
say that about a lot of songs on Fearless.
Well, I don't know any, because like you say, like your opinions change. Maybe my judgment is colored because, like, I do not listen to The Way I Loved You my daily life. I don't.
I love this song.
I don't know. It's like it's mid-range to me. It's like middle of the road.
Again, spiritual cousin to If This Was a Movie in certain ways. Very cinematic. Very, I want someone else, blah, blah, blah. Actually, that's not what If This Was a Movie is about. Never mind. I take it back. But yeah, I like The Way I Loved You. And the secret message is, we can't go back, which is vague.
That is really vague. And also totally does not fit the tone of the song.
It doesn't. It really, really doesn't.
Sometimes I think she just like, there are some songs where she cannot think of a secret message for us. She's like, I'm just going to pull this one straight out of my asshole.
Yeah, she's like, let me just think of the general emotion and then like tie that somehow into the secret message.
Yeah.
Then we get another personal favorite of mine. It goes all the way off all the time, any day of the week. My ass cheeks clap to the song forever and always.
Yes. Yes. Let me tell you, the first time I heard this song, I was like listening to it. I was like, oh yeah, this is cute. Bum, bum, bum. And then the "Were You Just Kidding" happened, and my ass fell up into my mouth. Yeah, I was shook. I was like, I know I'm about to get my ass chewed open. This was like the first song I heard off of Fearless.
I remember hearing it and the anger, the venom in this song. And this is a song where her drama works well. It's not overdone. This is like genuine, like she's not being melodramatic. Like she genuinely is so hurt and upset. And it all just like and angry and it all comes out in the song. And oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's just like the perfect blend of like everything, like the even just the production of it alone. I mean, the production is fucking insane. Not even to get started on the way that she performed the song on the Fearless tour, which
was something else. But she serves vocals on this song too. She really does. Strong vocal performance.
Oh, do you remember when she performed? What? I feel like it was the CMAs.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about it. The vocals on that performance were so bad. Weird that this was never a single. Very weird.
Yes, I agree, but I don't know if it would have gotten, I don't know if it was particularly radio friendly. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I don't think that it would have done well.
It was probably a little too pop rock for her image at the time.
And also, like, it was just, like, too long. Like, the ending is too long, you know? Yes, like, they'd have to cut it down.
And then the secret message to this song is, if you play these games, we're both going to lose T.
Which is true. That's T.
And Joe Jonas got his ass put through a meat grinder and handed back to him in pieces.
Yeah.
He tried to respond with the absolute flop.
He really embarrassed himself. But with much better. Wasn't there? There were two different lyrics where he said, "Now I'm done with superstars." But then there was another one where it was like, "Now I'm done with country stars."
Yeah. He thought he was doing something. And the boy is clearly not a songwriter. So it didn't pop off the way he thought it would.
No, and like that's the only drag in the whole song is I'm done with country stars.
Yep, that's
like,
it.
Okay,
and then Taylor goes on to include much better in Better Than Revenge, and she again serves him.
When I tell you that my hair fell out when I heard her say the term much better in Better Than Revenge,
I know it was.
I mean it.
Fucking. Serve. That was really that was like a slap in the face, really.
I mean, she had a voodoo doll of him and she knew exactly where to get him, and she got him.
She knew where to stick the pins in, and she did it.
Yeah.
So then we have The Best Day, which you clearly feel some type of way about.
It's my least favorite song in the album. I don't care for it. I don't really care for like these kinds of like sentimental songs anyway. I mean, like,
I'm gonna
I
say
also
that you don't like Never Grow Up either.
Yep, I also but fucking hate Never Grow Up.
I love both of the songs.
I just don't care for them. They're like
Best Day because I have a personal connection to it. I my very first open mic back when I used to sing, I performed this song as a surprise to my mom, who's in the audience that has never heard this before and like had never heard the song before. And I was, you know, bullied in school and my mom was there for me. And it's just like one of those songs that really like speaks to me personally. And it's weird because it's so specific to her, but then it also applies to my life, which I guess is the genius of her writing. But yeah, so this song is very special to me. My mom loves it. I love it. And you're a hater.
yes, I am a Best Day hater. I admit it. I don't care for this song.
And the secret message is God bless Andrea Swift.
That's T. God bless you, Andrea. Queen.
We love you. We're scared of you, but we love you.
Yeah.
So then we finish out the album with the lackluster and entirely too long change.
Oh, shit. I thought The Best Day was the last song on the album.
Nope.
I forgot about Change again.
We just talked about it and you're like, who? I've never heard of her. The song's message is, you made things change for me. Like, cool, Taylor. Who are you talking to? We still don't know.
I know. It's like, are you talking to your band? Are you talking
to
the
label?
Scott? Are you talking to me, Scott?
Yeah, are you talking to us? So that rounds up Fearless. What would you give it out of 10?
I would give Fearless a 9.
Same. I minus 1 point for the occasionally melodramatic antics of it.
Yes, Yeah, me too. Yeah, like, what do you expect? And then also just for, like, I guess for the best day and change, so honestly. I know.
I think that also Fearless elevates when we get to the Platinum Edition. We get some really good,
yes,
strong editions.
Yes, yes. It's crazy because, like, I don't even think about, I do in a lot of ways, but in other ways, I kind of think that they really are just like a part of Fearless because they just fit in so well.
It's just a shame they never got their just desserts. Taylor didn't really perform any of those songs.
She performed Jump Then Fall once on Dancing with the Stars.
She did? I didn't even know that happened. That's weird.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
And she performed Untouchable a few times.
Yeah, she did. An acoustic performance of it, like, during, I honestly want to say it was really early Fearless, or it was before Fearless even happened. And I loved that fucking acoustic cover. That fucking
so
song.
Good.
I loved it.
So good.
It was incredible.
So our first album tradition, obviously, is the prologue. And this one is really dramatic. Maybe I'll just read some choice quotes from it. To me, Fearless is not the absence of fear. It's not being completely unafraid. To me, fearless is having fears. Fearless is having doubts, lots of them. Fearless is living in spite of the things that scare you to death, and on and on and
man,
on.
She was drilling the idea home to us she defines fearless as. And
yeah, and it's not the dictionary definition, that's for sure.
It certainly isn't. It's the Taylor Swift dictionary thesaurus version.
And it ends with, I think love is fearless.
Thank you, Taylor.
Thanks, me Taylor. Same. Same. Taylor gets Twitter this year, which is funny. She doesn't use it that much because she's still on MySpace, old hag, but she gets Twitter. And then we get White Horse at the AMAs in the white dress. Lots of emotion, November 23rd. This is what you were talking about when you said she sang it, Joe. She was worked up in this performance for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't the best either. So.
No, the vocals were really, it's a bad look when she sits down to sing and still doesn't sing well.
Oh, God.
Like, Taylor, come on. You have a perfectly good single out now. Do Love Story.
But she had to do White Horse, didn't she?
Mm-hmm, to make a point. This is her. This, this will be the downfall of her, as we know, is that she loves to make a point.
She really fucking does. It's embarrassing
it is embarrassing. What's interesting is that there is no official second single from Love Story in September until December of that year. And White Horse is the second single, which was a weird choice for a second single to me. But
first, again, I feel like it was pointed.
Yeah, definitely pointed. The music video, like, I
don't want to talk about it. You know how much I love this fucking song? And she put me through that shit in the video. I almost can't even talk about it.
The video is just like, what is it?
I can't, like, when she's like walking down the street by herself at night. Oh. Why? By the way, why? And she sees him with his other family or some shit. And he's got groceries. I remember there being groceries.
Yep.
I really do.
And then there's the really dramatic scenes of her just sitting on the floor and crying, just sobbing. It was like, Taylor, we get it. Dialogue in the middle of the video. Oh.
I cannot stand dialogue that stops the song and in a music video. Unless it's like cool. You know, unless it's like.
It definitely wasn't that.
No, it was not cool at fucking all.
It was fucking lame. That's what it was, Taylor. It was lame.
Wasn't it like. They were on a show, like the actors that were there is like, oh, this is Trey from One Tree Hill or something like that. Right?
Remember.
Not One Tree Hill. It wasn't One Tree Hill. It was something else, but like in the same caliber.
Yeah. It was not a serve. So it debuts and peaks at number 13. Oh my God. Lol. 13.
Lol.
Hand Heart. So yeah, I think it's a weird second single choice. Good song, let down by the video, and it gets mixed to positive reviews from critics. And that is the end of 2008.
Really? 2008 ended with White Horse. God.
It did. Isn't that shocking?
That really shocks me.
So we started the year with a performance of our song on Ellen, and we ended with White Horse. So that's kind of, that's character growth.
Yeah, it is. It rounds the year out nice and tight.
So what do we think of this year generally, in hindsight?
I feel like it was a really definitive year for her. I think it was a really big year of growth.
Formative year for Fetus Taylor becoming Superstar Taylor.
Yes, absolutely. 2009 also is going to hit fucking hard.
Yes, it is. 2009 is where it all fucking kicks off.
I would also say the same thing about 2010, too. We are getting into it.
We're ramping up. It's only going up from here, literally.
Yeah, turbo mode.
Actually, it kind of goes down in 2016, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, we will get there eventually.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the second episode of The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach, and you can follow me at Reputation with three S's.
And I'm Madeline. You can follow me at Swift Chalamet on Twitter.
And we will see you soon.